Today, we're going to hear from a guest who uses an unexpected ingredient to spice up leadership and spark professional growth. Join us as we dive in and take a look at the role comedy and laughter play in leadership and how you can use the fun and creativity of improv to spark innovation and inspire your team. Hello, and welcome to Women's Leadership Today podcast, a feature of Women's Leadership Today. I'm your host, Michelle Myers. Well, I am so pleased to welcome our guest today, Andrea Flack Weatherald. She is a number one best-selling author of The Funny Thing About Forgiveness, What Every Leader Needs to Know About Improv, Culture, and the World's Least Favorite F-Word. Andrea, welcome. And I hope you have your cup of coffee. You know I'm a big coffee drinker. Or tea. I don't know about you, but I have to have it to start off my day.
Yes, I am a coffee person for sure.
Wonderful. Well, Andrea, I love hearing people's stories and journeys, and yours is definitely an interesting one. And what I really like about your story is you've really pivoted. You've gone from a career that I imagine was at times had to be pretty heavy and emotionally draining, and pivoted and put that to something fun. For our listeners, can you kind of share that story a little bit for us?
Sure. So my background in professional training is in social work. My degree is in social work, and I even passed the Ohio LSW exam, I'll have you know. And I still feel like a social worker. I was asked recently, I guess it was last year, but I was asked if I missed being a social worker. And my answer was no, I still am a social worker. I just use it in a completely different way. I just use my social work degree in a way I certainly was not imagining, you know? So just the trajectory there was, I was working on a research study that was exploring behavior modification intervention strategy, which I loved, 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 and had the incredible gift of being trained by, I think, some of our country's best teachers on motivational interviewing, which is something we can talk about later or not if you want to. but at any rate, it's a time-limited study. And during the time that I was working there, I actually had an idea for an app that I wanted to build. And so some friends and I went to Startup Weekend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and pitched this idea, and we actually won. And so then I was the CEO of this idea, and I'm like 23. I had no idea what I was doing. I did a super bad job. Drilled that company right into the ground in like 18 months. It was a wonderful learning experience, an absolutely fabulous learning experience. But part of winning Startup Weekend was that the Pittsburgh Technology Council allowed me to go to any of their events, like their leadership development training type of events, for free. And so I went to this training called Improv for CEOs. And at this point, I sort of knew that this company, like it was sort of like the writing was not quite fully on the wall, but I was just starting to like realize, like, I think we are out of money and out of time. And like, since we all have student loans, we're going to have to like make a different plan. But anyhow, so I went to this thing and I was just feeling so defeated. I mean, I was like, these are CEOs at companies that have skyscrapers downtown, and I'm the CEO of a flaming pile of poop, you know, like, and so I was just feeling all those feelings walking into it. And I knew that it would be fun, but I didn't realize it would be like soul level church. I mean, it was just like this beautiful, vulnerable experience of like, it doesn't matter that I'm the youngest person in the room by decades. It doesn't matter that I am learning lessons that they learned the hard way at some point in their career. You know, like it was just this beautiful experience of like, we're here to support each other. It was the first time I ever heard the words, your scene partner is a creative genius, but it's your job to treat them like that. If you want to see them be that, you have to treat them like that. And I just was like blown completely away. And so then what happened is I just got obsessed with improv. And I did need to get a different full-time job, see also student loans. But I just basically, I started performing every chance I got, taking all the classes I could get, auditioning for stuff. And just one thing led to another. And then I ended up leaving a job to produce and perform comedy and then do just random side gigs. Anything legal for cash was my threshold. to pay that rent every month.
But yeah, been there.
It just, yeah, for sure.
Especially in your 20s.
Yep. And that's what you do. And I have zero regrets. But then I just never shut up about how meaningful improv was to me. And I started this company by accident.
Yeah, I think improv is amazing. I have a couple of girlfriends who, you know, have their day job and never really got into improv. And it's just amazing how it really seems to open people up. So tell us a little bit more about how you help people apply improv to their professional lives.
Absolutely. So the reality is that the same skills that make improv work on stage make life work off stage, because life is improv. Like, you have been improvising. I hear you saying you might want to get into it, but you're already in, girlfriend. Like, you have been improvising since your first instinct as a baby to try and connect with another person. And you were figuring out like what works, you know, like how do you connect with this person? That has all been improv, you know, and what causes us pain in life is when we forget that. And then we start believing these stories that other people hand us, you know, because of their expectations for us or their desires for us or whatever. And it's not always selfish and greedy. Sometimes people have the very best of intentions, but they are teaching us what they learned, you know, and they don't mean to be putting all this pressure on us, but they're sort of erasing this inner knowledge that we have of like, this is improv. If this isn't working for me, there are other things that might, you know. Like, it's okay for me to leave this relationship. It's okay for me to leave this job. It's okay for me to pivot out of a career that had a retirement plan to write sketches with my friends on Saturday. Like, it's literally, life is improv. There are so many ways that this can work out. And the thing that has, I would say, become like my central focus in my work, it's my evil secret plan, if you will, is to teach people to teach people the skills that make the world braver, kinder, and safer by training people at work, because we spend so much time at work. And it is very valuable to companies for people to learn how to have brave conversations with each other before somebody starts looking for a different job, or even worse, before they don't look for another job, but they just disengage and start like toxically poisoning the water hole for everyone, you know. If we can learn how to stand in our integrity when we disagree, and we can learn how to embrace other people's perspectives and realize divergent perspectives build better products, though, you know, like, disagreement is so safe. It's actually really healthy. You know, if you're in a room and there's no disagreement, you're not innovating. I promise you that you are not innovating. And so if we can teach people how to embrace that differently and feel less panic and feel more security in the presence of disagreement, we are then equipping people to be collaborators that win together. So that's why it matters to companies. For my deep soul purposes, what makes me so happy is when I leave companies and people write to me personally, I've never felt more hope for my relationship with my dad, or this is completely changing the way that I navigate my marriage. And I'm like, this is how we build world peace. When we take these skills and we get out there, and it changes the way we behave at the Thanksgiving table. It changes the way that we interact with people who worship differently from us, or who just roll through life differently from us. You know, like, it's the same skills. And delightfully enough, improv is such a fun way to practice these skills that help us be the people we want to be more often.
So it sounds like people are taking what you're teaching them in, let's say, the office setting or the corporate retreat, and applying it to their personal lives as well, making that connection.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I know a big thing you talk about is brave conversations. And what does that mean? What does that look like? Is that, you know, giving negative feedback? Is that telling someone you have to take time off work? I mean, what is your definition of a brave conversation?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So I define it as any situation where you're choosing to be vulnerable and you're expecting some sort of pushback. So that might mean anything. You know, that could mean something can be vulnerable to one person and not the other. You know, this is something that I try to remind HR people and leaders, especially, that you are used to people asking you for a raise. You are used to people advocating for themselves or needing to self-disclose, like needing to say I'm pregnant or something. So a medical thing is happening, mm-hmm. a family emergency is happening. You are used to that. That is a typical Thursday for you. That's not a typical Thursday for Beth, who white knuckle gripped her steering wheel the whole way here, pep talked herself, mm-hmm. had her playlist going, has her mom waiting with her fingers crossed at the dining room table. You know, like,
yeah.
It's vulnerable for one person, even if it's not vulnerable for you. And so a brave conversation is just any moment. And this doesn't always have to be, you know, when you're interacting with HR or you're interacting with your boss. I think it's really important. And by the way, one of the things I care about the most, to equip people for having brave conversations about the little dumb stuff before it balloons into something it doesn't need to be. And when I say little dumb stuff, this is not a judgment. If you are upset about it, your feelings matter. You know, like it's mm-hmm. so easy as adults to be like, I should just grow up. Everybody has to deal with whatever. And this is not to say to pick every fight, but it is to say, if you're losing sleep over something, spend some time in curiosity. Not all brave conversations, by the way, happen with someone else. Sometimes a brave conversation is the one you have to have with yourself. And that's also part of my work. You know, like, why did that bother me so much? Is there some personal exploration that I need to do? Not every confrontation is external. Some of the most, like, I would say highest ROI confrontations are the ones that happen with you and you.
Very true. So Andrew, what inspired your book? So you kind of took us on your journey, you launched your business, you're doing something you're passionate about, you have fun with, which is really the dream, right? To get paid for something we love doing. That's just amazing. But to sit down and commit to writing a book, that's a whole nother level. So what got you to that point?
Well, I have always loved to write, and I sort of always knew that I would write a book at some point. And honestly, things just lined up really perfectly. I had been writing just on my own, and I wasn't really sure. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know what I was really doing, but I just would sit down and write. And it was just, mm-hmm. it was meaningful to me. And I wasn't sure if anybody would ever see it, but I would just sit down and write. And somebody reached out to me through LinkedIn, which has been one of the hugest ways that I've built my business and my career, by the way. Shout out to LinkedIn. But so somebody reached out to me and said, the stuff that you're putting in your newsletter, the stuff that you're putting out here on LinkedIn, it should be a book. Would you ever consider writing a book? And he had a company that helped people write books and publish them. And so I started working with him, but before I signed the contract, I took it to a mentor of mine who, his book did really, really well. And he worked with the publisher. And I just was like, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Like, can you look at this and tell me, is this good? Like, I don't know. And he was like, do not do this. This is not a good
deal. Oh, really?
Like, don't do this. So I didn't end up working with that
person. Oh, this is your mentor.
Yeah. My mentor was like, I wouldn't do this. And so he gave me very, very helpful advice. And there's so many details here. I honestly feel like I could probably talk way too much beyond what anybody wants to hear me say about just feeling like I got a degree in books. I'm like noticing I have these weird little, I like scorched myself with the flat iron, but it does not matter. We're going to move right on from that.
You look beautiful. And trust me, who hasn't done that? Okay. I don't wake up like this.
Right. But yeah, so one thing just kind of led to another. And what was so beautiful to me is that at every point that I was like, I don't really know what my next step was. It was like my universal scene partners, if you will. It was like one thing after another, just kept lining up. It was like, the more I just stayed faithful to like the little bit that I know to do right now, then the next right thing just fell into place. Like I started working with a consultant, and somebody had said to me like, well, you know, you don't have a very big platform. And that's true. I do love LinkedIn, but it's only been recently that I've put any bit of effort into like building a platform of followers. Like I just had felt so weird about that before. I don't know. But so I hadn't really. And so they said, you're not going to be able to sell a book at all. You're going to sell 12 copies if you don't like find a partner. Do you know a famous person that could maybe write the forward? And I said, does anybody just say, yeah, I have a famous person just right here in my back pocket. And he said, well, sure. I just think about it. And then it just so happened that the producer on a movie that Colin Mochrie was in, Colin Mochrie is one of the core cast members of Whose Line Is It Anyway? He was in a movie called Act Social that's basically about similar spirit, not exactly what I'm doing, but similar spirit to what I'm doing. They were going around and having folks that were Democrats and Republicans come in and improvise together. And no one was allowed to know who was who.
Wow.
You couldn't like wear anything indicating who was who. But it's like we take improv classes together and then we have conversations that are meaningful. And at this point now we've built some trust. We've been vulnerable in front of each other. You know, we're more than one thing to each other. And so it's just this beautiful idea. So the producer had reached out to me because our work was similar. And it was just kind of like a, hey, I wanted you to know this project existed. And we became, I think we're friends. We became friends. And so in the time, his name is Sean Mulvihill and he's wonderful. Sean, I hope we're friends. We're officially at this point, I'm deciding that we are friends.
It's on the air. It's out there. So it's official
done.
Now.
It's perfect. Yeah. It's official.
Documented.
So then one thing led to another and that's how Colin Mochrie ended up writing the foreword for my book. And it has helped me immensely for his partnership on this project. So anyhow, I said more about the technical aspect of this, but building a book, I keep saying building instead of writing. It really does feel like that though. Writing is one part of a book entering the world. There's so many more parts than the writing.
I love hearing it. It's so interesting because we kind of think like, oh, you just kind of sat down and typed away and now here's your book, you know, having not gone through the process, I don't think anyone could really understand how much work goes in before. And I guess even after you actually do the content, we think of just like the content creation side of it. But I want to go back to the improv. I love what you were saying about getting people with different, very different ideals, right? The Democrats, the Republicans in a room. So when you go into these companies and you do these improvs, what does that look like? Are people pretty open to it? Are they hesitant? Because of course you're going to get the extroverts. I'm sure you're going to get those introverts too. And have you ever seen it just get like crazy heated?
No.
Good.
Has it gotten crazy? I one time was at a convention and there were like 300-ish. I don't remember anymore exactly how many were in the room, but 300-ish HR folks who were like away from their families and they had been drinking. Uh-oh. And it was I was like, oh, I am going to sit in the quiet sauna later. Like this is a bit much for me. But to the heart of your question, it gets vulnerable. My ideal situation is to play improv games in smaller groups. I have now gotten to the place where I, in 99.8% of situations, require my clients to make the improv games part optional for people. And that's just been born out of years of doing this and realizing that if somebody, there was a specific example of somebody who had autism and was deeply overwhelmed in that situation. I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. Like he was miserable, walked out. It was a whole thing where then he was embarrassed. And I was like, this is my responsibility. Like, this is my fault. I should have asked. I should have thought about this. It had not happened before. And anyhow, grace for the journey. I learned, and now I've made adjustments to make sure that this experience honors the people that are in the room. That was always the intention.
Well, that's the best we can do. I mean, we learn. Yeah. We learn through our mistakes.
Yep, we learn. That's exactly right. So, but what I think you're ultimately asking is like, you know, where is the impact? Like, where is this felt for people? And so much of it is just the act of choosing to be vulnerable in front of people who see you as professional, who have this vibe from you, you know, and especially as women, by the way, at least I guess I can't speak for all women, but I know for me, I kind of come from this story that's like, you have to earn that respect. Nobody will give it to you. They're going to look at you and they're going to see a Barbie doll and it's your job to teach them to respect you. And like, I remember those words being said to me, you know, and just sort of feeling this like huge responsibility, you know, to decide what people will see when they look at me and what people will experience when they work with me. And so in some ways, improv is asking you to sacrifice that a little bit. It's asking you to release the power hierarchies. Yeah. You know, and that can feel very scary and maybe even disempowering. But the thing that you get on the other side of it is so incredibly worth it, because on the other side of it, you have a real connection. On the other mm-hmm. side of it, you have the forever ability to see someone as more than one thing about them. And the reason why it's just so beautiful and so powerful when groups do opt to do the improv games with me. And by the way, it's not the same as an improv class. It's probably worth mentioning that I teach mindful improv thinking. It's this blend of who I am as a social worker, what I understand about mindfulness practice, what I understand about behavior modification, like the things that I learned from working on this research study about, like, if you want people to change, you got to meet them where they are, you know? So there's this like other foundation of it that's just sort of integrated into what games I choose and how I coach them, etc. But the felt impact is people choosing to be vulnerable, people having fun and laughing in front of each other, people noticing sort of instinctually, you know, oh, I've been speaking up a lot. How about I back off a little bit, you know, or sort of instinctually.
Which is an important skill. We've all been in meetings where someone just dominates the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And doesn't have that self-awareness to, okay, now let's let someone else have the floor.
And improv is this balance of finding the courage to add something and finding the humility to listen. You know, like every interaction always with me starts with this understanding of what does yes and really mean. It doesn't mean we're saying yes to everything. We don't say yes to racism. We don't say yes to sexism. It doesn't mean that we're just ignoring problems and everything goes. That's not what it means. Were you to take an improv class? And by the way, Michelle, I really hope you do. Sounds like you have some great resources.
I think so. Yeah, it just sounds so much fun.
it's fun and it is deeply meaningful. But were you to take an improv class, you would totally realize that these words are deeper than yes and. And really what we're talking about is courage and humility in equal measure. And when you walk through brave conversations with courage and humility, courage and humility, courage and humility, and you, instead of planning every single thing you're going to say and walking in with a bullet list of stuff to be like, sit down and listen. And instead, you just trust this give and take, give and take. It's scary, especially I know that there's HR people whose butt cheeks are clenched together so tight, they're like about to lose it. Like, because there's this, you know, in HR, this sense of like, you know, responsibility to the company, to CYA, and like, you know, there's things that I have to say. And it's like, yeah, okay, yes, and that can be true and more things can be true. What do you ultimately want? If you want to find a way forward with this person, social scientists know that there's a different way to do it. We know, I shouldn't say we, as if I'm a social scientist, to be so clear and stand in my integrity, I am not a social scientist, but I love them. Anyhow. So the idea is just this balance, humility, courage, humility, courage, humility, courage.
And a word that comes to mind, and you know what, you might've even said the word earlier. If you did, I apologize, but thinking I came up with it, but vulnerability. And you made a really great point a few moments ago where you were saying, you're talking about, you know, we have sort of this mask at work and letting people kind of sort of see behind that, right? And I think it is work. The workplace probably is the most challenging place to be vulnerable because we think we have to have, I think especially for women, sort of this mask, this shield of professionalism. And I know growing up, and it sounds like a similar experience for you, we were sort of coached or told that vulnerability, emotions have zero place in the workplace. And what I really love is we're really seeing that change. I mean, you have Brené Brown, who talks about vulnerability, authenticity, and being honest. And we have
all of these Brené Brown books.
I did not, but kismet. I honestly didn't even see that. My eyesight isn't looking great. But yeah, so you read it, you live it. So I think it's wonderful that, you know, people like you are able to come. And I think it's wonderful that organizations are bringing people doing like what you do into the workplace because they are seeing the value of that authenticity, that vulnerability, making real connections. But I know that has to be tough, especially like you said, for our HR folks out there because you know, there are certain, their hands are tied in to a certain degree, right? I mean, there are, we've done whole programs on it, webinars on it, where, you know, what can you say? What can't you say? Sometimes you can't let all the dirt fly mm-hmm. because you're going to get yourself or your corporation in hot water. But I'd love to pivot back to the title of your book, and I'm going to read it again here for our audience because it is a long one, but it's a fun one. The funny thing about forgiveness, what every leader needs to know about improv, culture, and the world's least favorite F word. So is that F word forgiveness, I must
sure
assume?
Is. Yes. Yes.
All right. And talk to us a little bit about this. You know, where does, what role does forgiveness play in leadership?
So one of the things that I think it's maybe the first thing I say in the book is that forgiveness is the least talked about and most important leadership skill, because anything else that we aspire to do as leaders, whether that's delegate better, communicate better, hold the vision better, you know, build a company without getting totally burnt out and letting our marriages and our relationships with our kids fall by the wayside. Any other thing that is so important to leaders, you will do better and you will do more consistently when you learn how to be proactive about forgiveness. Why is that? Because you already know active listening is important. You already know delegating is important. You already know real feedback is important. There's nothing that I can say that you're gonna be like, oh, really? Feedback? How about that? I didn't, this is earth changing. So glad we brought you in. You know, that's not, these are not earth shattering pieces of advice. The transformational piece of this is, why don't you do that more? What is it that makes it so hard for you to receive feedback without being reactive and prickly and shameful and whatever? Like, why is it that it's hard for you to give feedback in a timely manner or without being overzealous or whatever? Like, why is it that you step outside of what you know is best? And the answer is, you've seen poor templates of this in the past. You've seen templates of leadership where it was my way or the highway, where it was not servant leadership focused or whatever. In your head, when you got that feedback, what your brain, that is a supercomputer and a pattern-seeking, amazing piece of equipment, as Brené teaches us, you know, and many other people that study the brain. But what we know is that your brain, maybe without you even realizing it, said, uh-oh, you're just like your mom. You knew it. You're just like your mom. Uh-oh, you're just like your dad. You know, like that's what your brain is doing to you. Something happens and inside of your brain, inside of your heart, you are not even dealing with this scene partner anymore. What's happening is something that's got nothing to do with this at all and has everything to do with you telling yourself what kind of person you are, what kind of person this is, or how the world really works. You know, I should have known that this wouldn't be possible for somebody like me. You know, people like me don't do this. People like me are just guaranteed death and taxes. You know, these stories that we've heard over and over and over and over. This is why forgiveness matters. This is why forgiveness matters.
And is the forgiveness, is that more forgiving ourselves or is it forgiving the person sitting across from us or a bit of both?
All of it. So what I teach in the book is that forgiveness is your ability to get present in the moment and notice what is the limiting belief that is causing me pain right now. My hypothesis and the thing that I teach is that any negative emotion, whether we're talking about shame, resentment, anxiety, suspicion, like whatever that feeling is that you're having towards yourself or towards someone else or toward the world, you know, like in 2020, when I was finalizing this manuscript, it just felt like the world was on fire. And so people were just like angry at like ideas, you know, like, and so whatever it is, the ask is to say, okay, the only reason that this is causing me pain is that in this moment, I am believing because this happened, because that person got the job I wanted, or because this person left me, or because whatever it is, because my mom was who she was, or because I come from where I come from, whatever your story is, because of this, now I can't X. So if you're following that template, you notice what pain you're having, what feeling you're having. And instead of pushing it aside in order to be positive or whatever, you say, hey, no, it's okay. You're allowed to be here, shame. I see you. What are you teaching me right now? What are you pointing at right now? Okay, anger. Okay, jealousy. Okay, whatever it is. Totally safe for you to be here. What are you pointing at right now? So that's that first step. And then the second step is to note, just like allow yourself to notice, like, this is the thing that I'm upset about or that I'm angry about. What is the limiting belief here? That's the more important question. We get really tripped up thinking, what kind of person would do that? And reliving these frustrating, painful memories. True. You know what I mean? What should I have said? That's what I do to myself. What should I have said? You know, reliving that. Is that helpful at all? No. Our logical minds know we cannot reverse time and go back and do it differently.
Oh, but we wish we could. Know that.
We wish we could. Yes, indeed.
But you're like, I could have shed him.
Yes. But we do know that that's not how it works. And so for me, it's like, let's accept that. Yes. And okay, we can't go back. Since we can't go back, let's stop rehashing that. That's not helping us at all. Instead, the more helpful question is, what limiting belief did I start believing in that situation, in that relationship, in that job, in that situation? What limiting belief did I start believing about what is possible for me? And then you reclaim what the real truth is. And the real truth is, life is improv. There are infinity 0.5 billion ways things can work out for you. The only thing that you had taken from you is that one, that just wasn't your job, sister. That just wasn't the thing. That doesn't mean that there's not the perfect next thing. It just means that thing wasn't it. That was not yours. You know, nobody can take their big fat ladle and scoop away all your good opportunities away from you. That's just not how it works. Life is improv. Life is improv. Life is improv. So the more that you just like literally remind yourself, that's what the deep truth is. My character is endlessly capable of pivoting and creating and imagining and partnering and just doing something different, doing something new that is always available to me. And this is getting pretty macro level. And if this is scaring people or they're starting to lose touch with it, bring it down into something specific and small, you know? So for me, this is okay. In this brave conversation, a perfect example. I mean, there's so many, but I'm going to draw from one from my personal life because, by the way, it's all connected. It is the same me, my same heart, my same mind, my same self in a sales call as that just came from family court. I mean, this was my life. So our children are adopted out of foster care. And that journey was long, long, long. We could do a whole podcast interview just about foster care. Very long. And it pretty much, if you're not familiar, foster care is when your heart is in a blender for like 2 years. That's what foster care is.
Imagine.
And I remember different times leaving family court and just being wrecked and having to come to terms with the fact that I'm like, I cannot just roll right on in to my next thing of the day. Like this didn't just now happen, you know?
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to talk with our children's birth father. And this was, there's so much into this, but just for the purposes of our conversation right now, what was important for me was to realize that even though I loved these children more than life itself, and even though it felt like a pain beyond what I can even express in words, the thought of them not being with me anymore, I also deeply believed and knew in my heart, it's improv. It's improv. You just cannot get hung up too much on how the story looks in any one moment because things are always changing. You just don't know the future. And also, it is safe to work with an imperfect scene partner. Everything that exists in the whole world, if you want to look around at like this mug, this desk, books, my phone, like literally look around yourself right now. If you are listening to this, just like take a second and look around at your stuff and your life and have that prove to you that imperfect people can work together to build amazing things. Like life proves this to us over and over. It is safe to work alongside someone who has shown you that they are imperfect. And so I finally have this like understanding within myself that like, I am unconditionally going to be okay. I am unconditionally going to be okay. And I had this moment with our kid's birth father that still stands out to me. And I'm just so thankful for it for the rest of my life. Where I just like gave him this tight hug. And I told him with every bit of sincerity in my heart, I am rooting for you. I am rooting for you. And I want good things in your life. And it was just like this, I walked away from it. And I felt like no matter what happens, I know that I have stood in my integrity. And that's something that can only serve me.
And it really, I really get the sense that this really allows you, this approach, to be in the moment. Oh, that's another takeaway I get from it. Just like you said, you can't predict the future. You can't change the past, but you're here. You're now interacting with your scene partner, as you say, and you can be here in this moment. And I think that has a lot of power in itself too.
Oh, it really does. Mindfulness practice is just such a beautiful way to care for yourself deeply. It's self-care that actually matters. You know, I sometimes have the self-care of like binge watching Friends in the tub, you know, and there's that type of self-care. And then there's the self-care that's like, oh yeah, brings me back to my inner knowing and like helps me be who I want to be in my life.
I think in 2020, that was all of our form of self-care, right? But, and I know you're a fan of comedy, and I want to ask you, you know, when you sit down and you are binge watching your Netflix, when it's not Friends, who are you watching?
Oh man. So I feel like I remember reading that you love stand up, and I have been thinking I need to give it another go. Not necessarily me personally, but I mean like watching stand-ups. In the past, I have not super enjoyed stand-up because my experience, having dabbled in various forms of live comedy, was that in a lot of stand-up green rooms, there's just this like celebration of self-deprecating humor. Like I just didn't know how to, like these were my friends that were going up as comics, you know? And I was like, I don't want you to ask me to laugh about your weight. I don't want you to ask me to laugh about your childhood trauma that you haven't recovered from. Like, I don't want you to ask me to laugh about your drug problem. Like, I worry about that, actually. Like, I don't know. So it's just, for me, like, and what I have come to realize is that there is lots of stand-up out there that is not that way and that is absolutely life-affirming. And, like, what I mean by that is just, like, joyful and, like, putting goodness into the world and not being, like, you know how we all do cocaine and we're just really sad? And I'm, like, I don't like that. Like, I don't, that's not how I roll. So I would say I should probably like watch more stand up because I get asked this question a decent amount and I'm always like, I don't really know. But I do love, there exists on YouTube and different places, recordings of Amy Poehler and Tina Fey doing improv.
I love both of them. Oh my gosh.
Favorites. I do too. And I've just learned so much from them about what it means to be unconditionally curious. Like anything can happen in improv. And I, different times I've seen them on stage get a suggestion or just something develops in the scene that I'm like, ooh, I would be like hurt if like a guy on my improv team put me in that position. And they just like, they have so practiced curiosity instead of judgment, curiosity instead of judgment, curiosity instead of judgment, that they just are like, great, I have the next right thing. I received that as a gift instead of as a threat. And I pivoted it towards something that honors me. And I'm just like, be my life coach. Like, thank you.
I love that way of looking at it. It's a gift, not a curse. Yeah. And especially like Tina Fey, you know, talk about someone who I think is authentic. Like whenever you see her in an interview on stage, you really do get the sense that she's very transparent. This is what she is. She's not putting a mask or a persona out there. This is what you get. This is who I am. But I think it's interesting your comments about, and maybe you're coming from a different stance because you know some of these people, but some of those comedians who use that self-deprecating, I actually have a different view. Maybe not the cocaine use. I agree there, but some of the women who talk about maybe it's their way, the relationships, family struggles. I think it almost gives some of us watching sort of that sense of, oh, it's not just me who struggles with this. Like, this is this person being very authentic on stage, broadcasting this to the world. And we can, we laugh at it, but we're not laughing at them. We're laughing with them because we've been through it sometimes. Yeah. So I think sometimes there can be that. And again, comes back again to that vulnerability, which is so hard for us to do.
Well, thank you for sharing that perspective. I really appreciate that. I think it's good to remember that there's always more than one way to experience something. And the way that something hits for you is not the way it hits for everyone. And like, I'm so thankful for every laugh and every moment of feeling seen and every moment of feeling like, oh, maybe there is room for somebody like me on this earth to like be all of who I am. Every moment that stand-up has given you that felt like that, I'm so thankful for, and I just absolutely celebrate. So thank you for sharing that with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, Anitra, before I let you go, I wanted to kind of shift gears a little bit. I was looking at your website and I see you do these really cool corporate retreats where you go hiking and kayaking. And I'm a big hiker. It's one of my favorite things to do on the weekend, go out with my girlfriends or paddleboard. I don't do a lot of kayaking, but paddleboarding. So where are some of your favorite places to hike? And second part to that, what's your dream hike? Like, do you want to do Mount Whitney? You want to do Everest? Like, what's your bucket list?
Okay. So yes, I love hiking. I'm a little bit limited in where my dream hikes can be because I don't love camping. I keep trying to love camping. Like, I actively want to be somebody that wants to be in a tent. I just don't. I want to be in the Hilton Garden Inn by the mountain. You know, I want to like do my hike and then go get a massage. That's like the way that
nothing wrong with a little glamping.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. My husband, I adore him so much. So he grew up Mennonite on a farm and he has a different way of interacting with nature. He's so funny because I'll be like, I booked us this cute lodge. We're going to go camping for the weekend. He's like, that's not camping, what you just described. I'm like, yeah, we're in the woods though. Like, we might see a bear.
Trees.
Yeah. I was like, I can look at nature animals. That is camping.
I feel you. I've done the camping. We have tents. We've slept on the ground. We've done all that. And, but honestly, and I used to really enjoy it, but as I've gotten older, I mean, we still have all the camping gear. It's tucked away up in the attic, you know, up in the garage, you know, loft space. But I look at it and sometimes I say to my husband, like, do we really need it? Like, if we got rid of all its stuff, like, when am I going to use this again? I can't part with it, but get to a certain point where I like my creature comforts, not creatures. I like my hot shower. I like my my sheets. So don't
that's
feel
just
bad,
how but... I feel about it. But so my favorite place to hike, to answer that part of your question, I led a retreat a couple of years ago. This must have been in 2019 because I think it was the spring before the pandemic year, I think. But anyhow, I led this retreat in the Blue Ridge Mountains down in North Carolina in a town called Montreat. And it was oh, have you really?
Yes.
It's like so beautiful. It's beautiful. Love it there. I just absolutely love it there. And yes. And so I don't necessarily do corporate retreats in this manner. Usually my corporate retreats are wherever they have booked. Like, I just go wherever they've decided that their retreat is going to be. But I do one-to-one retreats where individual clients that are working with me to learn mindful improv thinking for maybe a big transition that they're going through or a difficult situation that they're dealing with or whatever the case may be. They can book a one-to-one personal retreat day where I plan the whole day around their desired, not everybody's like, please pick a bouldering hike for me, you know, so just whatever their level of challenge that they desire is. And I just love doing those so very much. I am so excited because I'm doing one on the beach for the first time next month. I live in Ohio. And so I don't, we don't have ready beach access really. So anyhow, that'll be.
Well, I'm in San Diego. So I have.
So you just
beaches
beach
for
it
days.
Up all the time. Are you on the beach right now? And you just have like an office background. Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah. Thank goodness for virtual background.
Everybody else puts the beach as their virtual background, but you're on the beach with an office virtual background.
Yeah, I get in trouble for it. All right. Well, kayaking, I want to ask you that before we wrap up. Where's the most exciting place you've kayaked?
So I'm newer to kayaking. And honestly, the most exciting place that I kayaked was in Cuyahoga Valley National Park, which is actually not very far from where I live. But I was kayaking with my sister, and this bald eagle came down like right over the river. I mean, it like looked me in the eyeballs. It was like crazy. It was like so close. That was really, really cool. I'm newer to kayaking. I have definitely decided that I like river kayaking more than just being out on like a lake. Mm. I was recently kayaking with my daughter out on just like an open body of water, and the wind was just blowing us around every which way, and it was not ideal.
I'll share my amazing kayaking story. The last time I went kayaking was a couple years ago. We were visiting a family in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Ooh, and beautiful.
Yeah, we were at a nature preserve, and we just rented some, you know, kayaks from some stand, and we're going through like the mangroves, and we came across a pod of manatees. And now we gave them their distance. Like, we weren't paddling up to them. We gave them their distance, but they are huge. Like, you know, they're big, yeah. But they swam up to us, and then they would roll over on their back, and they wanted their belly rubs. I'm not even joking. Gosh. It was amazing. But when you see when these giant things like swim, like right under your kayak, and their tails are like, well, I can't even get my hands big enough on the screen, like this big. It was scary, but one of the most amazing experiences. It was so fun. And of course, no one, I think we were like, oh, I think there were three or four of kayaks with two each in it. Not a single one of us had our phones on it. So we just had to enjoy that. Like, talk about being present. Like, that's just something we have to remember. But it was, that was amazing. So I do love, like I said, paddleboarding, hiking, getting out in nature. Because again, kind of going back to this idea of mindfulness and just being in the moment. For me, that's one of the ways that I do it. It sounds the same for you too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Andrea, thank you so much for joining us today. It was so fun speaking with you, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it, and I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I just, again, love to drive home that message of it's okay to be vulnerable, even in the workplace, and let people see your awesome, authentic self.
Absolutely.
Well, all right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I'd definitely like to say a special thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. And you can find us on YouTube, listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or pretty much any streaming service that you use. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. All right. Thank you, everyone. And thank you again, Andrea.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening. The Women's Leadership Today podcast is just one feature of the Women's Leadership Today community. We empower women to advance in their career through targeted professional development, learning experiences, and resources, such as live and on-demand courses, customized training solutions, up-to-date publications, and more. Visit womensleadershiptoday.com to join our community and take your career to the next level. Together, we can empower women everywhere to lead, innovate, and inspire change.